This week, we tackle the topic of literalism and allegory. Are there dangers of being too literal? Are there dangers of being too allegorical? Then, I'll talk a little bit about what it means to jump back in the pool after 6 years. Steve Harrison stops by for an all-new Masonic Minute. Masonic Relics, Disrespected and Respected. Steve talks about that topic and just what it means. Then we'll read Part 2, Chapter 6, in our continuing read of Max Heindel's Ancient and Modern Initiation, with a chapter on the Garden of Gethsemane and sorrow. All this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode number 491. Right off the bat, we need to thank the producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners of the show. If you want to know how to help us with this program, head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out your options there. There's really a level for anybody who's looking to support Masonic education, and I thank you in advance. In the news this week, what's going on? Well, I want to tell you about a couple things that are coming up and are really exciting. The first is this thing happening on April 24th. What could it be? I haven't really talked much about it, and that is because it's a little bit more of a regional thing, but if you can swing it, I cannot tell you how much of a great investment it's going to be. On April 24th is the Midwest Conference on Masonic Education 2021. The Midwest Conference on Masonic Education is something that has been around for decades, and many states in the Midwest actually send their education representatives to the conference. This year, it's virtual. Last year, it was canceled. It was supposed to be, live, and this year, it was going to be live again, and it was supposed to be right here in Chicago. And unfortunately, the pandemic has ruined this also. Just add another thing that, it has actually ruined for us. But the next best thing, of course, is to do this conference virtually. And what's going to be great about the conference is not just a thing where people are going to be pontificating to you. This is going to be a really great workshop. So there's going to have some interactive sessions on education techniques, programs you can use in your jurisdiction, and learn what works in lodges, and also network with other Masonic educators. We're going to have Chuck Dunning speak. Brother Brad Drew from Northern Kentucky will be talking. Brother James Buckhorn will be there. Brother Chad Kapinski, who is the head of education in Ohio. Scott Duball, former Masonic educator and head of the State Education Committee for Illinois, will be there. And Brother Spencer Hammond, a local district education officer here for the 1st Northeastern District of the state of Illinois. And one of my great friends, my current worshipful master, actually. So it's going to be a good time. I will be in attendance also. I'll be helping to facilitate some of the breakout sessions. We want to keep those breakout sessions kind of small. So there's going to be many, and you'll recognize some of our facilitators and people who will assist us in getting this all together. What's the cost? When is it? All this stuff. It's $25. It's a virtual event. You can go to tinyurl.com/MCME2021. It'll be Saturday, April 24th from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. We may finish up sooner, but just so you know, those are the dates, and I think you're going to have a great time. Now, just like the very next weekend is MasonicCon in Attleboro, Massachusetts. MasonicCon is happening on May 1st, okay? And this is one that got pushed back two times, and now it's happening in a limited in-person engagement. But right now, tickets are on sale for virtual tickets. The virtual ticket are also $25, the magic number. I think you guys will really love it. It's a virtual pass, and you also get a t-shirt. So for $25, you get access, and they'll mail you the shirt. It's going to be awesome. Who's going to be talking? Well, they have Reverend Hank Pierce and Matt Weisel, Tony Crisos, Chuck Dunning and Ben Wallace will be presenting together. Maribel Martinez will be there doing her talk. Brother Barry Gould will be there. The Kill-Winning Club of Boston will be there. I'll be speaking also on a topic of interest, an all-new talk based on an old paper that I think you will all enjoy. You're also going to hear from a foremost Masonic authority on a lot of stuff, and he's also a Grand Secretary, Brother Daniel Gardner, Valdir Faria, and a surprise panel discussion. This will run from 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time, and I think, again, you all will really enjoy it. It's going to be a fantastic virtual event, and if you want to get a ticket, you can go to tinyurl.com/MasonicCon2021. That's MasonicCon2021. That'll take you to a Facebook event page where you can select the number of tickets. And when you select the number of tickets, you'll be able to click the link for Get Tickets. And those are through Eventbrite. I'll have all the links to these in the show notes. And I'm really telling you, it's going to be a great time. And we'll be back to getting in person soon with these in-person conventions. But, you know, we've been pushing this Masonic Con, which is 2020-ish, for over a year now, because we really wanted to get it in. And Brother Brian is so excited to bring this to you. So, again, check it out. Now, let's get into this week's first piece. It's been a little while since I've read something from the Philosophical Society, but my good friend, Kristen Wilson Slack, wrote a piece back in December of 2020, December 14th to be exact, and it was called Symbolism and the Literalists. Let's check it out. Fundamentalism is everywhere. Let's be clear. Fundamentalism is strict adherence to basic principles of any subject or discipline. In most cases, people use it to discuss religious adherence to the word of any particular religion as being absolutely true and literal in all sense. You can be, however, a fundamental ballet dancer, barista, or car mechanic. And also, to be fair, being a fundamentalist isn't necessarily a bad thing. It comes down to one additional feature, an open mind. Tolerance does not mean you walk away with someone else's views being your new truth, or a completely changed mind. It only means being able to accept that which fills the universe might be slightly bigger than your own fundamentalism. What has this got to do with symbolism? I just read a recent article on the symbol of the skull in Freemasonry. The article is well written and somewhat shocking to me. How could anyone who has been a Freemason for any length of time at all think that the skull represents something horrible and to be feared? Then I realize, there are literalists everywhere in Freemasonry, like there are everywhere. They might not understand the idea of teaching via symbolism, or that symbols are human communication mechanisms meant to stir the deep unconscious and subconscious, a la Joseph Campbell. So let's take a look at the purpose of symbolism. Books, tomes, volumes, caves, papyrus walls, and stelae have been written about symbols, their meanings, their other meanings, and still stranger meanings. You cannot spit in a metaphysical bookstore without hitting a volume about that author or society's view of what a particular pictograph meant. A cat means the afterlife, and it means cleanliness, or attentiveness, or patience. That's well and good. But what is symbolism? What is a symbol? Symbolism is using symbols to represent ideas or qualities. A symbol is something that simply is a picture that stands in for something else. It isn't what it is, but what it might act like, or a quality it exudes. So a picture of a cat can be a cat. It can also stand in for the idea of patience, observance, or hospitality. What matters here is context. Sometimes a cigar really is just a cigar. Sometimes, as Freud so eloquently poked at, it is not. By their very definition, a literalist cannot understand symbolism. A literalist does not, cannot, see that cat as anything but a cat. A fundamentalist takes words for their exact meaning. There is no such thing as allegory, metaphor, or symbolism. There cannot be, else it breaks the very idea of their fundamentalism. Fundamentalists must have a very difficult time at comedy clubs. The point is that many conflicts come from a literalist and non-literalist arguing over meaning. Religions splinter and fragment based on a symbolic or literal meaning of a single text. The two ways of approaching thought, mind, discovery are challenged every day to come together. Symbols are there for the explorative mind. Symbols expand our way of thinking about something and break us out of following a single track. It cracks fundamentalism and provides new neural pathways in consciousness. What does it take? Yes, an open mind. It takes a curious mind, It takes a mind that is afraid of being different than it once was. It might even take a little comfort in the chaos and disharmony of discovery. The Freemason is an adventurer, an explorer. She's looking for a world bigger than herself, bigger than her current roadmap. She's looking to build a map of imagination and wonder. Freemasons discuss and debate symbols because to the Freemason, a symbol is only a beginning point. The symbols take on myriad meanings, all being right at some level. When we share our discoveries with others, we're offering a guidepost in a new land. We're opening portals to a wider existence, not just for one, but for all. The goal is to search for truth, not one truth or a person's opinion, but truth, the fundamental idea of why we are here. Thus, I think it would be very difficult for someone who is a literalist or fundamentalist to be a Freemason. Even fundamental Freemasons are struggling in decay. Discovery breeds creativity, and creativity is growth. Can a literalist be a discoverer? My open, inquiring mind wants to know. And of course, this comes from Kristen Wilson Slack. If you liked this article, you know, she actually wrote a little bit for the book that we released called How to Charter a Lodge, and she has her own personal insights in there on what she went through. The article she referenced about the skull actually comes from Darkness to Light, a blog that is an anonymous blog posting, but nonetheless was a medium-length article here. Hashtag no skulls in masonry, just kidding, there are, is the name of the article. And it's a great article. So I'll have a link back to this as well as the blog post by Kristen Wilson Slack over at thephilosophicalsociety.org. For our Craftsman Plus out there, I want to know, in terms of symbolism and literalists, is there room for both? Let's say in the Masonic Lodge, can you in fact have both? This is an interesting idea because of all of the stories that we tell about Freemasonry are allegorical in nature to what we are working on. But perhaps to a religious fundamentalist, those stories that we use as an allegory are literal outside of Freemasonry. What are your thoughts on symbolism and literalism when it comes to Masonic ritual? Next up, I wanted to read you a short piece that I put up recently because it's been a little while since I've written something, and it's not that I'm struggling to come up with anything, it's that I'm just really busy with school. But the other week, I found out something interesting and kind of exciting, very exciting, and I wanted to share it. So the piece is called Jumping in the Pool by me, Robert H. Johnson. As the COVID cases begin to rise again, likely due to people letting their guards down a bit, we have more and more people around the globe getting a vaccine. I got my first dose of the Moderna vaccine recently, and no, I have no side effects. Although I am aware that the second dose may be a doozy. A small price to pay to protect those people I love, and of course, that includes my brothers. My Masonic involvement has really dwindled. My actual duties to an organization are really light these days. I suspect many brothers and sisters are in the same boat. Before COVID hit, I had demitted from my mother lodge and really focused on Space Novum, the lodge we formed here in the northeast corner of Illinois. I went from Royal Arch and council meetings on Tuesdays, a Blue Lodge meeting on Mondays, Thursdays and Fridays, plus various speaking gigs to just one Friday a month. Wow, am I right? This gave me some free time I needed with my family. I went back to school. I doubled down on other ventures in writing and media production, but something was missing. I didn't know how to approach it, really. After some reflection, it was revealed that the missing thing was in-person masonry, and also a new challenge. With the prospect of Space Novum meeting in person again in the coming months, I'm excited. I'm the secretary. It's a great job that I expect to hold for the rest of this year and likely 2022 as well. After that, I will retire from the officer line of my symbolic lodge, destined to become, as one member put it, senior sideliner. But what else can I do? How do I approach it? Just jump in the damn pool, Robert. So I did. I've applied to a few different Masonic organizations in order to see if I can assist by actually getting in line. It was a really weird thing to decide to do. After all, I have been absent from a progressive/elected line for nearly 6 years. And you know, the only reason I got into it the first time was out of a debt I felt that I owed to my mother lodge. I served. Now that my kids are a little older, things are more stable, and I'm finding myself with some time I'd like to dedicate to more service to Masonry at my local level. So, I just jumped in. Sometimes that's what it takes. I've mentioned it more than a few times in my writings and presentations. Nike has been giving us the secret for years. It's right in front of our faces. Just do it. If you've been mulling it over, waiting for a reason to get involved, go for it. Let's walk down to the quarry together and get back to work. And just what that position is, well, I can't really talk about it just yet, but you all will know by the beginning of next month probably. But I'm pretty excited at being able to be of service once more. Now, of course, I still am on the Masonic Education Committee here in Illinois, but it's not lodge work, right? It's committee work, which is really fun and gratifying. And I've got some great projects lined up there. So if you're like me, then just jump in, guy. I want to know if you have thought about jumping in the officer line, whether you've never been in it before, or maybe you've been absent for a while, or maybe you never walked away. Tell us a little bit about it. Now let's hear from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison.
Years ago, I was working on installing a system in a large metropolitan bank's safekeeping department. The executive offices there were glass-walled, and I saw a group inside one standing around something a customer had brought in for storage. I went over for a closer look and saw they were inspecting a violin, a Stradivarius violin. This was back when employees could smoke in offices. And there stood one of the execs, leaning over the priceless instrument, with a lit cigarette hanging out of his mouth. Not only that, the butt had a long trail of ashes on the front, which, predictably, dropped onto the violin. He brushed the ashes off, and the gang continued gawking. I was stunned they could treat such an incredible piece so carelessly. Over the years, I've had occasion to see some pretty significant Masonic memorabilia. Many times when I've had hands-on access, I think of that little scenario in the bank and remind myself to take the utmost care with the item. I've seen many such items at the Truman Library in Independence, Missouri. The staff there bends over backwards to dig out documents and artifacts for researchers. White gloves are the order of the day as researchers go through the precious treasure trove of Brother Truman's life. On one occasion, I was there researching the well-documented account of the President's visit to Beech Grove Lodge in Indiana. While on his whistle-stop tour in 1948, Truman evaded the press and much of his traveling party to attend a meeting at that lodge and raise a brother who worked for him. At the close of the meeting, he asked if he could keep the apron he had worn as a souvenir. As the staff at the Truman Library gathered items relating to that visit, one of the artifacts turned out to be that apron. I was mesmerized as I looked at it. I felt as if I was in the presence of the President himself. Unable to resist, I broke one of the library's rules. I slipped off my glove and I touched it. I probably shouldn't have done it, but something inside me just wanted that connection with the historic apron. I don't think I hurt it at all. It didn't seem the same as dumping a pile of cremated tobacco onto a Stradivarius. What's more, I'm not sorry. I would do it again. Guilty as charged. I didn't do it maliciously. I did it out of respect. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
Sometimes, Steve, is this is just funny. I love this story, and I knew it was going to come to that, that I knew what his response and his thought process was going to be. Y'all would have done the same thing, probably. when he talked about the violin there, I mean, I have one of my best friends is a luthier, so a violin maker by trade. I almost certainly think that if Spencer had heard this story, he would have had a look of shock and dismay on his face, but probably not, you know, all too surprised at the way we've treated things over the years. I really enjoyed this Masonic Minute. I hope you did too. And if you like this kind of stuff, please consider subscribing to the YouTube channel where you can watch the short video clips that go along with these that Steve has put together for us. And you can also check out his YouTube channel as well. And really, his book, Freemasonry Tales from the Craft, is wonderful and gives all kinds of great stories like this. So if you dig that, then we'll have a link back there in the show notes to the bookstore, right there on the Whence Came You podcast website, which goes through Amazon affiliate links for us. Thanks for checking those out. And thank you to illustrious Brother Steve for putting these together. All right, next, we are going to read Part 2, Chapter 6, Ancient and Modern Initiation, Gethsemane, the Garden of Grief. Here we go. Now, before we begin the article, it starts with a lengthy quote from Mark 14, 26 through 38. And when they had sung a hymn, they went out into the Mount of Olives. And Jesus said unto them, All ye shall be offended because of me this night. For it is written, I will smite the shepherd, and the sheep shall be scattered. But after that I am risen, I will go before you into Galilee. But Peter said unto him, Although all shall be offended, yet will not I. And Jesus saith to him, Verily I say unto thee, that this day, even in the night, before the cock crow twice, thou shalt deny me thrice. But he spake the more vehemently, If I should die with thee, I will not deny thee in any ways. Likewise, also, said they all. And they came to a place which was named Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, Sit ye here, while I shall pray. And he taketh with him Peter and James and John, and began to soar amazed and to be very heavy, and saith unto them, My soul is exceedingly sorrowful unto death. Tarry ye here, and watch. And he went forward a little, and fell on the ground, and prayed, that if it were possible, the hour might pass from him. And he said, Abba, Father, all things are possible unto thee. Take away this cup from me. Nevertheless, not what I will, but what thou wilt. And he cometh and findeth them sleeping, and said unto Peter, Simon, sleepest thou? Couldst not thou watch 1 hour? Watch ye and pray, lest ye enter the temptation. The spirit truly is ready, but the flesh is weak. Mark 14:26 through 38. In the foregoing gospel narrative, we have one of the saddest and most difficult of the experiences of the Christian mystic outlined in spiritual form. During all his previous experience, he has wandered blindly along. That is to say, blind to the fact that he is on the path, which, if consistently followed, leads to a definite goal, but being also keenly alert to the slightest sigh of every suffering soul. He has concentrated all his efforts upon alleviating their pain physically, morally, or mentally. He has served them in any and every capacity. He has taught them the gospel of love, Thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, and he has been a living example to all in its practice. Therefore, he has drawn to himself a little band of friends whom he loves with the tenderest of affection. Them has he also taught and served unstintingly, even to the foot washing. But during this period of service, he has become so saturated with the sorrows of the world that he is indeed a man of sorrows and acquainted with grief as no one else can be. This is a very definite experience of the Christian mystic. and it is the most important factor in the furthering his spiritual progress. So long as we are bored when the people come to us and tell us their troubles, so long as we run away from them and seek to escape hearing their tales of woe, we are far from the path. Even when we listen to them and have schooled ourselves not to show that we were bored, when we say with our lips only a few sympathetic words that fall flat on the sufferer's ears, we gain nothing in spiritual growth. It is absolutely essential to the Christian mystic that he become so attuned with the world's woe that he feels every pang as his own hurt and stores it up within his heart. When Parsifal stood in the temple of the Holy Grail and saw the suffering of Amfortas, the stricken Grail king, he was mute with sympathy and compassion for a long time after the procession had passed out of the hall, and consequently could not answer the question of Gurnermans, and it was that deep fellow feeling which prompted him to seek for the spear that should heal Amfortas. It was the pain of Amfortas felt in the heart of Parsifal by sympathy which held him firmly balanced upon the path of virtue when the temptation was strongest. It was that deep pain of compassion which urged him through many years to seek the suffering Grail King. And finally, when he had found Amfortas, this deep heartfelt fellow feeling enabled him to pour forth the healing balm. As it is shown in the soul myth of Parsifal, so it is in the actual life and experience of the Christian mystic. He must drink deeply of the cup of sorrow. He must drain it to the very dregs, so that by the cumulative pain which threatens to burst his heart, he may pour himself out unreservedly and unstintedly for the healing and helping of the world. Then Gethsemane, the Garden of Grief, is a familiar place to him, watered with the tears for the sorrows and sufferings of humanity. Through all his years of self-sacrifice, his little band of friends had been the coalition of Jesus. He had already learned to renounce the ties of blood. Who is my mother and my brother? They that do the will of my Father. Though no Christian neglects his social obligations or withholds love from his family, the spiritual ties are nevertheless the strongest, and through them comes the crowing grief. Through the desertion of his spiritual friends, he learns to drink to the dregs the cup of sorrow. He does not blame them for their desertion, but excuses them with the words, "The spirit is indeed willing, but the flesh is weak." For he knows by his own experience how true this is. But he finds that in the supreme sorrow, they cannot comfort him, and therefore he turns to the only source of comfort, the Father in heaven. He has arrived at the point where human endurance seems to have reached its limit, and he prays to be spared a greater ordeal. But with a blind trust in the Father, he bows his will and offers all unreservedly. That is the moment of realization. Having drunk the cup of sorrow to the dregs, being deserted by all, he experiences that temporary awful fear of being utterly alone, which is one of the most terrible, if not the most terrible, experience that can come into the life of a human being. All the world seems dark about. He knows that in spite of all the good he has done or tried to do, the powers of darkness are seeking to slay him. He knows that the mob that a few days before had cried Hosanna will on the morrow be ready to shout Crucify, Crucify. His relatives and now his last few friends have fled, and they were also even ready to deny. But when we are on the pinnacle of grief, we are nearest to the throne of grace. The agony and the grief, the sorrow and the suffering born with the Christian mystic's breast are more priceless and precious than the wealth of the Indies. For when he has lost all human companionship and when he has given himself over unreservedly to the Father, a transmutation takes place. The grief is turned to compassion, the only power in the world that can fortify a man about to mount the hill of Golgotha and give his life for humanity, not a sacrifice of death, but a living sacrifice, lifting himself by lifting others. This was a neat expansion of the text here in Ancient and Modern Initiation. I think for the Christian Mason in particular, this holds a lot of great value. Even for those who are not of the Christian denomination, will, I'm sure, find appreciation in the allegory that's being told. One of the great examples in this particular paper that I found, well, there were really two, I should be honest. Two things that stuck out were the idea of doing to others, which really kind of struck a chord. And it remembered when I was in a philosophy class, I used to save all my inserts, all the readings. And One of the readings we got was this idea of the golden virtues, or the golden rule, in almost every faith. So if we think about this one, Rabbi Hillel from the 1st century BC says in Judaism, "What is hateful to yourself, don't do to your fellow man." In Christianity, of course, we have Jesus of Nazareth, 1st century AD, says, "Whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye even so to them." In Sikhism, 16th century AD, "Treat others as thou wouldst be treated thyself." Confucianism, 6th century BCE, "What you don't want done to yourself, don't do to others." Buddhism, 5th century BCE, "Hurt not others with that which pains thyself." In Jainism, 5th century BCE, "In happiness and suffering, in joy and grief, we should regard all creatures as we regard our own self, and should therefore refrain from inflicting upon others such injury as would appear undesirable to us if inflicted upon ourselves." Zoroastrianism, 5th century BCE, "Do not do unto others all that which is not well for oneself." Classical philosophy. Now this comes from Plato, 4th century BC, and for Masons, think about that charge on the first degree. "May I do to others as I would that they should do unto me." In Hinduism, "Do not to others which, if done to thee, would cause thee pain." From the Mahabharata, 3rd century BCE. So anyway, I just wanted to share that little bit with you all, a blast from my academic past, but nonetheless, really insightful and kind of cool. The other part of this that I thought was really outstanding was this idea of a living sacrifice, lifting himself by lifting others. I seem to remember Albert Pike saying something along the lines of refusing to admit greatness and to instead, at every instance, turn it around. And I think that's really important. Not to lift yourself, but really to be genuinely concerned by lifting others. So my question for a Craftsman Plus for this recent chapter here is, give me your thoughts in and around the idea of the golden rule. I look forward to hearing what you have to say. That's it for this week. I want to thank the fellows, producers, contributors, and legacy partners of the show. If you want to learn more about how to support the show, head on over to wcypodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out the options there. I really appreciate everybody who has made this program a priority and to help us bring Masonic light to the world. And I want to thank Brother Kevin Standen, and I'm sure the rest of our runners-up to the contest for our supporters have by now hopefully received your tarot decks that I sent out. And Brother Kevin, looking forward to seeing you online, at least, at Esotericon coming up in a few weeks. That's it. I'll talk to you all next week. We might have a special guest, maybe, probably. I'm hoping. If not, maybe, you know, I don't want to tell you who it is, because then if I don't have him on, you guys are going to yell at me. But I'm hoping to have a special guest that you all will really enjoy. And if that interview takes place, then I'll certainly announce it on the Facebook and on all the social media outlets. And you'll know what to expect when the next episode comes out. But until next week, stay on the level. And for Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.